Welcome to Virtually Speaking, a TechNet radio presentation. I'm your host, Yang Cho, a technology evangelist at the Microsoft. This is the third episode of our automation series, and in the last two episodes, we give you a broad introduction of automation, including system management automation, Azure automation. And the last episode, we're focusing on how you configure, how you operate system management automation, which is kind of outside of the workload. Now, how we deploy them. Today, we're going to focusing on internal the workload. In other words, how we can be sure that we deploy our configuration in a consistent and persistent manner. Online with me, I have two experts on this so-called design state configuration. Tian de Turbin at the Netherlands, and also Michael Green with us. And guys, introduce yourself briefly. Go ahead, Tiander.
Sure.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm Tiander. I'm a senior program manager in the Enterprise and Cloud Group. I'm based in the Netherlands, close to Amsterdam. So if you've never been to Amsterdam, please give me a visit. And I've been working within Microsoft since 98, so that's a long time ago. And recently, for let's say almost 2 years, joined the Enterprise and Cloud Group. Thanks.
Michael?
Hey, so I'm on the same team as Tiander. I just celebrated my 10th year at Microsoft last month. So I've been in a variety of roles all over Microsoft, but at this point, I'm in the Enterprise Cloud Group, and my focus is on all things PowerShell. So I work with a lot of customers and travel around and kind of help understand where the industry is going. So very fun role.
Well, welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining this episode. And I'm going to start with Michael. So Michael, what is DSC? Give me a clear definition and how it relates to, for instance, like the automation, like the DevOps things.
You got it. So to me, DSC in and of itself is the Microsoft tool set for declarative configuration. So declarative configuration, in my mind, primarily started whenever the industry started observing, hey, over the past 5 or 6 years, these startups have really proven we can take technology and with just a few people, we can get ahead really, really quickly. Well, how are they doing that? A lot of them are using cloud as the foundation for where they're deploying things to. And so they didn't have the overhead of the caring and nurturing that goes into servers. A lot of people in the DevOps world will refer to this as treating your servers like cattle, not like pets, right? So you're not doing this every day. I'm going to worry about the health of this machine and things like that. If it's just part of a service and it's really a fungible item, especially if somebody else is running it for me, right? I should be able to just tear that thing down and reprovision a new one, depending on whether it's stateless or not. I can do that very quickly. And so what's very interesting, if you look at how technology is moving as a result of that, the industry is taking a lesson from these startups and saying, hey, you know, that doesn't have to be all public cloud. We could look at that for private cloud scenarios as well. And really, how I define my infrastructure can really be something that's document-based. If you think about over the years, how we've configured networking equipment or how we've configured Linux machines, properties within Linux machines, for the most part, those configurations were documents that were living somewhere, right? If you went in and edited your network configuration, you're just making changes to the overall flow of how that configuration is written. And at the end of the day, you could even take an MD5 hash of your entire configuration and compare that against a known good state. Well, to do that with Windows is a challenge because Windows operating system is an API-driven configuration. So there's not a single document that you can go to and edit it and make changes. Of course, there's some of that for IIS, but you also have the registry, and you have WMI, you have the file system. You may have flat files within the file system that contain configuration settings. You need to keep track of all those individual files as well. And so DSC is really a way to say, what if it was possible for me to take a document-style configuration and use that approach for the Windows operating system, and what would that look like, and what would the benefits be? And of course, what we now know is that's great, because now when I'm provisioning a service to a Windows machine, just like I've got the code that's going to go into sustaining that service, I can also check in the configuration of my Windows operating system and just include that in my source code. I can keep track of it. I can version it. I can, when I go to tracking changes, instead of being, hey, I got to wait for the third Thursday of the month for the, you know, change operations meeting, and we can all approve this new group policy setting. This should be something that we should be able to make multiple changes per day if we need to, because it's a known thing, it's versioned, and before we do it, we're going to kick off automated tests, kind of like we've talked about in the past, so that everything is validated before it goes into production, and whenever possible, we should have a rollback procedure in mind to get back to the latest version prior to that. So this is a huge change for the way that we approach things.
Actually, now before we go to Tiander, I do have two things that I pick up. One is this DSC or so-called design state configuration does apply to non-Microsoft workload like Linux operating environment.
It does. Sorry, I thought that was directed towards Tiander, but yes, absolutely. So Chris Bash within Windows Server Engineering as well has done a lot of work in this area. And I'll tell you what, it would be great at some point. We might want to have Chris on the show and dig into this in detail. But yes, absolutely. A couple of things factor into this. One, through the OMI model, we can actually connect directly to Linux machines if they've got OMI in the kernel. And push configurations directly to them. And a lot of times we can drive those configurations through Linux-based scripting languages like Python. The Nexus 3000 and Nexus 6000 from Cisco also natively offer, if you have the software capability built in, or addition, I should say, to use OMI to manage those. But recently we've been exploring this capability of DSC to, within your resources, drive through SSH, through command lines, things like that, completely non-Windows devices. So we're thinking about that as a DSC proxy, and that's something that we're kind of looking at as a potential expansion area going forward.
Great. And the second thing you mentioned is a declarative, right? I guess as opposed to imperative, the declarative is sort of like tell you what it is, right? Rather than give you all this detail, like how did you get there and what do we need to do? We just say, you know what it is, go ahead and do it. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Somebody, when we think, in the automation session, we talked about, hey, if we're going to do something more than once, then let's just automate it so that in the future, it's not this big headache to go over and over and over again. Kind of the same policy applies here. So let's author these resources one time. Let's do a good job with that. And then that's on the bookshelf. And whenever we need that knowledge, we can just take it off the shelf and go to the right page, right? Same thing when we go to this declarative configuration document. We don't have to know how to, let's say, add a Windows feature using PowerShell every time. We're just going to say Windows feature, ensure present, done, right? And that declares this feature should always be present on this machine at all times. We can decide whether we want to just do it, if we want to do it and then monitor for changes, or if we want to do it and then correct it ongoing. I've actually ran into a lot of people who get worried that, oh, well, isn't this always going to auto-correct something if I define a server a certain way? You can do that. I would encourage you to do that, but you don't have to. You can absolutely use DSC as a one-time thing if that's the appropriate case for your scenario.
Great, great. So we get a kind of overview and then a great concept from Michael. Now, Tiander, now here's the tough question for you. So how do we do it? How do we implement this thing in our environment and to ensure that we have a consistent and persistent deployment in terms of the configuration?
So that's a great question because it might be in kind of a hidden secret, but you probably already have DSC on your computer. So check out under program files a folder called Windows PowerShell. It's part of the WMF, the Windows Management Framework 4.0, which you probably already have installed. And we do have WMF 5 in preview out there. But most likely you already have it on your system. And again, DSC is to narrow it down, it's PowerShell. So if you got to love PowerShell, you played around, it's a bunch of, as Michael just mentioned, a configuration script. So remember and that might be a good topic to touch. Remember the old days with SMS, which is currently now known as System Center Configuration Manager. We all love that product for a long time now. I've used to work with it extensively, and remember that we came from creating golden images, and we had to create what's now known as an unattended XML. We created SMS packages and advertisement. We had to do complicated stuff like package chaining with all kind of dependencies, which became kind of messy. So with DSC, as you just shared with us, is a declarative way of saying, hey, this is how the environment should look like. We are not running behind the facts, but we are saying this is the environment, go make it so. And as Michael just said, it is also for initial deployment. So remember that you can have a mixture of DSC. You could have that in just a script. You could invoke a script. You could have, if you are a SCCM customer today, you could include it in your task sequencer, in your packages, embedded in WDS, Windows Deployment Service. And that's a great way of mixing the old and the new. But to come back to your original question, I deviated a bit. Apologies for that. So DSC, actually, as it is today, consists of three components. So first of all, you would have the schema explained or defined in a managed object format file, also known as an MOF file. Then we would have a data file, a PSD file, and most important, we would have the actual module with an extension of PSM1. And that is actually your, let's say, and Michael is going to show it within a couple of minutes. It's actually a very human readable configuration file. It clearly sets out what your intentions are, what the DSC is doing for you.
Well, great. And I heard about that, like, DSC is based upon PowerShell. I think the good news is PowerShell, you can use a text editor to create one. So it's really simple to do so. And so in a way, it's sort of like if you have a text editor, then you can actually do configuration management in a way, because PowerShell is also available in all modern Windows installations. So I think this is something that really, like, we can live by every day, and we can do it anytime, anywhere, and probably on any device, and to do the configuration management. Now, this is all great, and like always, I always want to see it happen. So, gentlemen, are you ready to show us some good stuff on DSC?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to switch over to my machine, and I just want to walk you guys through a couple of different things. I'll tell you, from talking to a lot of customers about DSC and from talking to our MVP community, a number of people have said, hey, I've seen that you guys are publishing all these resources. There's like 60 or 70 plus resources out there now, which means if I want to do things like join a domain or create a domain controller or even configure something more advanced like Exchange, all the script work is already done for me, but I don't completely understand how to use it. So I wanted to touch base on that and kind of walk through a handful of what we call configurations. So just to set some terminology, the resource is the script behind the scenes that stores the information about your get, your set, and your test, right? So set the machine the way it's supposed to be, test to see if it's still holding up to that declaration, and then get would return how exactly is this machine configured for all the things I'm looking for. And those are all within the resources. What we probably have failed to provide enough detail about is what is a configuration. And so your configuration is something that once you have those resources, you would author, in many cases yourself, but there's lots and lots of examples out there, even embedded within each of these configurations. When we ship configurations, we always try to include a real live configuration. When we ship resources, we try to include a real live configuration example. So this is a case for if I want to have this server become a certificate authority. Obviously, there's lots of things I can configure, but this is sort of the canonical use case. So I'm saying, hey, I've got a domain, and I would like to have an enterprise root certificate authority available within this domain to issue certificates to down-level machines. So all I'm saying is I'm giving that a name, so the configuration keyword, and then I provide a name for that. Here I would say, and this is, by the way, this is copy and paste out of the example that shipped with the resource. I would say, what's the name of the host where I want to apply it? And then I'm calling the Windows server, or I'm sorry, Windows feature resource. And so Windows feature is one that's baked in out of the box. I'll show just a real quick view of this. But if you go into, if I make this full screen so you can see the full path here, under System 32, under the PowerShell folders within modules, if you look in the PS desired state configuration folder and then go into DSC resources, this has been true. So if you go anywhere that WMF4 is installed, but if you go look on 2012R2 especially, just out of the box, go to this folder and you'll find here's the list of built-in DSC resources that you get for free as soon as you install Windows. So in particular, we're looking at the role resource right now. So if I go over here, in this case, it's referred to as Windows feature. I just give it any name I want that's unique for this machine. And then I'm going to say, for the cert authority role, ensure that it's present. And then if I go to my experimental resource for Active Directory Certificate Services Certification Authority, again, just give that a name. Again, I'm going to say, assure that this configuration is present. I've got to have a credential that I'm going to use. And I think in future resources, we're going to start calling this something like install credential, because we want people to understand that this isn't any sort of a run as for what's happening. This is what's going to be used to bring this service online. And then what role, what CA type? There's lots and lots of credentials. In fact, if I hover over this, I don't know if my machine will allow me to do that or not. I don't have this resource loaded up on my machine. Usually if I control space whenever I've got my mouse cursor on that, then I can hover and I can get the complete list of credentials, of parameters that are available. So that's a little trick that you can use. But what's really interesting here is I'm saying, hey, before I can configure that certificate authority, I need to have this Windows feature online. So these things are processed one and then the other, and that's great. But if this fails, I don't want to waste time handling, can I go in and configure my certificate authority? So that's where we use this depends on parameter. This is built in. So this is something that DSC handles. It doesn't have to be anything that's unique whenever you're authoring a resource. You kind of get this one for free as well. And I'm just going to say, hey, go look at the Windows feature resource that I've called out before now, and specifically the one with this name. And that has to be successful before you even try to process this part of the script. And so that's what depends on will do for you. And then I'm just kind of cascading these on, right? So I'm saying, okay, well, assuming that stuff all worked, now you can add web enrollment and then go ahead and configure that as well. I'll switch over here. So this is one that Tiander actually developed, and I'll give him a chance to talk about it, but a very similar concept.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. So when we are participating and monitoring forums, remarks and feedback we got is, hey, why don't you create something to make remote desktop settings way more easier to manage? And that was even not talking about DSC. So remember, this is a real life scenario. Remember, if you deploy a VM on Azure or you deploy a VM within your data center and you wouldn't have console access, I mean, Hyper-V console access that is, and RDP would not be enabled, that would be very tricky to get on that machine. You have to do something with WinRM and do sophisticated stuff. So that was the birth, actually, of this module, this resource, which in a few human readable, understandable lines will utilize some technology, some scripting techniques, how to enable RDP. So in this case, we are leveraging DSC to make sure that we set the correct registry settings for it, that we create firewall rules, and this is utilizing the experimental firewall resource we have. So as Michael just pointed out, you can utilize multiple resources within a configuration. So you don't have to stick to the one you are currently working at, but you can get all the resources in there which you need to achieve your goal. So when you have that configuration, you see on the bottom and in green, create MOF, and that will actually generate a MOF file for you. So we do that out of the box. So if you are a really nerd and tough guy, as we sometimes are, you could create your own MOF file if you want. It's an open standard. You could create it with other tools, but we provide you out of the box to create such a file. And Michael is showing here how that MOF file will look. Also, we did in the remote desktop settings, we respected a secure authentication. So this is respecting NLA authentication against that server. And in the example, we even go forward and show you how to work with certificates. And that's basically the RDP example. On the last line, that's the start DSC configuration, and that's where you actually apply that configuration to a specific computer name. And what we always do is do a wait and verbose, which will give you the output of that specific start DSC configuration.
Okay, so Tiander, so it seems to me that you will start with the configuration, and then you will produce a MOF file.
Yep.
And then you just execute a MOF file. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what it is. Yep.
Oh, so the process is really, really simple. It's very clear. You create a configuration, and then you simply just execute that portion to produce the MOF file and just do this as start DSC configuration. So then there you go. Then you can implement the configuration.
Yep. That's the three major steps, and that's not much you can do wrong with it. So that's the whole strength behind it.
Oh, this is great. Now, hey, I want to author this. How can I do this? How can I create a file like this?
So if you open ISE, I'm using ISE Steroids, which is a really fantastic product that has all kinds of shortcuts built in for PowerShell authoring, and it just extends ISE. But in the default ISE, you can just go up here and hit New. And then when you've got just a blank canvas like this, if you hit Control-J, this is a really neat functionality in ISE that will actually invoke all kinds of examples that you can find for, hey, I can't remember how it was it that I put these things together. So if I just start typing configuration, you'll see, and then obviously that's popped up here, and it says, hey, is this what you have in mind? Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking of. So I'm just going to tab autocomplete. And there it gives me an example configuration. When I go out and write configurations, I'll be honest, this is usually how I start. And I just go in here and say, hey, to rewrite his, I'm going to say, I care about making this RDP. I'm going to remove my comments and clean that up. But I'm going to import -DSC resource. And I'm just going to say Rux remote. I can type. So that would give me access to the remote desktop admin. And then I could come down here. They're using file. But by the same token, I could say I want to bring that in. Again, I just give that whatever name I want, some name. And then I'll give you an example here. So if I hit Control Space while I'm hovering over that, there I can see a list of all my parameters and just decide which ones are important to me for this one and get it going. So, and then again, so I mentioned that configuration keyword is describing RDP. So down here, just like what Tiander was saying, I would just say, hey, I want to invoke RDP, and I want to create a moth. I'm going to put that moth in /C:/RDP, and that would generate the moth file for me. But, you know, you can really tell by looking at how easy and clear these things are. Like, just ensure this is present, and then user authentication secure, versus if I were to have to edit that moth file manually, No one's going to know how to type this out of the box, right? No one's going to, from memory, remember everything that should go into this, particularly around source info. So this is just a really nice, clean way to do it. But, you know, we can do more complicated things as well. So I'll give you a couple of examples, and then I'm going to show one for where we want to get to. But this is one we had authored, and I'm going to collapse some of these, because here I'm just taking in some parameters. And then here, Tiander mentioned that we can handle certificates. So this is just a boilerplate section that I bring in to help me store credentials securely using certificates. But in this case, I wanted to create a domain controller. And so this configuration has a lot more going on But it's following exactly the same model. So I'm saying I need a data disk for my Active Directory database to live on. So I'm using a wait for disk, which is one that we hope to release maybe even this week. If not, it'll be next week or soon after. So by the time this goes live, either you'll have wait for disk or it won't be too far from release. Here I'm saying add domain services, and then I'm using the XAD domain resource to make this the first domain controller in my forest. And then you'll see here I'm also generating the MOF file that has the local configuration manager settings that say if a reboot is needed, just go ahead and let DSC handle it, and then set the mode to apply an autocorrect. So in this case, it would be if somebody should go in and remove the data disk or make this machine not a domain controller, it's going to promote it right back up to being a domain controller. So like I said, you don't. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not, but there's three modes that you can put this configuration mode in. Apply only, which would mean just do it and then leave it alone. You can do apply and monitor, which would say do it, and then just allow the machine to check for whether or not that's changed, but don't do any corrective functions. And then you can do apply and autocorrect. But that's really relevant. I want to point out Bruno on our team has published on the Building Clouds blog a management pack for System Center Operations Manager that will use that functionality I just described in a monitoring capacity. So if you've got System Center Operations Manager and you're using DSC across your infrastructure and you said, boy, it would be nice if I could just get a simple red, yellow, green that tells me, have these machines been able to stay in that state that I declared, this will do that for you. And if I scroll down, you'll see that he's also included a task. So here I can drill in and see, yep, I've got a configuration drift. If I go into my individual alert, I can say, yeah, it looks like he did a get-DSC configuration and it returned red. So why is that? If we run that task, it will do the get-DSC configuration and return the results. So in this case, I think an example, he had file. It should be in a specific place. And the results, it said, ensure absent, go check for this file. It failed, which means that that path actually is available on that machine. And that's why it failed. So this is a really cool solution for being able, from a top-down or centralized point of view, track even these fairly complicated configurations that we were looking at. Very similar over here. I've got one for Exchange. So this is going to go out and build an Exchange resource, an Exchange server. But one of the things I wanted to call out here, there's a resource now available. Some of these on this screen will be out again just this week for pending reboot. And the only thing that's interesting about this is I'm saying give it a unique name so I can have more than one within this configuration if I want to. But the pending reboot resource will just, I'm basically declaring, hey, this machine should never be in a pending reboot state, right? So if depending on how you want to handle autocorrect, I'm saying if there's a pending reboot waiting, just go ahead and handle it. So if this is part of a highly available service and somebody comes in and makes a change outside of this configuration and now there's a pending reboot, that could screw up some other operations that I'm depending on in my automation. So it's saying make sure I clear that out. And then I wanted to show a little bit about, hey, what would it look like if I'm going to change the name on this one real quick. If I combined a couple of really cool new technologies, this is a little bit of where we want to get to. I took a look at testing this prior to the meeting, and the current OneGet module that's out there in GitHub doesn't work exactly right with the DSC resource, so I'm going to take a look at that. But in this case, I'm combining OneGet and DSC. So what I should be able to do in the future, and this will be true by the time that the next version of Windows Server becomes available and OneGet is a first-class citizen and all of that, all these things are in preview right now, so we're still kind of working things out. But I should be able to go in and say, hey, I want to make this box a Minecraft server. So I went out to Chocolaty, and I found out that they've got a Chocolaty package called Bucket that uses the ability to go in and rapidly make modifications to that server. And so in my DSC configuration, I'm going to call OneGet. And so what would be really cool when this works and everything's functioning as expected, I'll be able to just have a DSC configuration, even for my own laptop, that I just kind of keep around, and I can include OneGet packages. And I can say, hey, I would like to have, you know, X, Y, and Z different software installed, or I could even do the same for a server if I trust those sources as known good repositories. So I could use a one-get package manager and point it at a local repo and say, hey, I get this DSC resource, and any time that I want a new server to be built and I want these outside things to be available on installed on that server, I can just include one get in my DSC resource. So we're not quite there yet, but I wanted to give you a little sample of where we're headed.
Well, I tell you, Tienda and Michael, that's a great demo because I've been taking my notes and I probably have wowed like 20 times. That's a great demo. I'm so excited about this DSC thing. I actually write down a number of things. Like, you know, it's a PowerShell-based, DSC is PowerShell-based, and I can use text editor to do it. It's applicable to Linux workload, and we can do it in Microsoft Azure as well. And there's many, many samples. And thank you for pointing that out, Michael. And we can also use that to actually automate the entire process, including join domain, things like that. And there's a set dependency in Tiender's samples. So I think, you know, I got a couple of things listed out here. You know what? I realized this is actually very handy for me to kind of plan my server 2003 migration.
Yeah, that's a great point. We know that our customers today have huge challenges in migrating from Windows Server 2003. They might have their environments and breaking their heads around how do we get that to the latest and the greatest versions of Windows. So if you think out of the box and think what DSC can mean for you, you could explore what you have in your workloads, dissect it, look at the services you have running, and with the things we showed you, and we just showed you a little bit of the iceberg, so to say, that could be one important strategy for you guys out to migrate stuff over with the help of DSC.
Yeah, while you're still running your 2003 servers, you can say these are the services that we're providing. Let's map those out as declarative configurations. Yeah. And then as we start deploying these Server 2012 R2 boxes or beyond in the future, we can say, I'm just going to declare this is how these boxes should look and bring it online. We're sort of starting off the next generation with the best practices first. It'd be a really great way to plan out your migration strategy.
Yeah. Now, Michael, you show us a kind of a little tool towards the end, something about, you know, setting up this and you see green light, red light. What was that about?
So Bruno on our team, who I know in the future you're going to have on the show, it has been creating all these fantastic tools around PowerShell. And that's just one of the latest. And it's just a management pack for System Center Operations Manager. And it allows you to get that red, yellow, green health status. Because one thing I keep hearing from people is, hey, it's great that I can go out and say for this individual node, declare that it should look the way it's supposed to look. But how will I know when I've got hundreds of these machines that across my environment, everything is configured the way that it's supposed to be? And this would allow you to use the monitoring tools you probably already own to verify. I can just look at my dashboard and say, yep, everything's in the green. I'm across the board. Everything's configured the way that it's supposed to be. And if it's not, from that same console, just execute a task. Hey, go out to that server and find out what's not configured the way that it's supposed to be. And then I can come up with a plan to help remediate that. And you know what, Young, I'll tell you something I bet you didn't know. In WMF5, which is in preview right now, there's actually in the latest build a concept called partial configurations. So the concept here is just for that same concept that I was just talking about for configuration drift. Well, what if I want to apply two or three different configurations? So again, people have kind of gone from their minds are continuing to follow the track. So, hey, I've got one node. Well, what if I have 1,000 nodes? Well, you know what? What if on that one node, I don't want to just have one configuration that I apply? What if I end up deciding that there's two or three different concepts of configurations and I want the aggregate of that work coming together on that node? So partial configurations deliver that. And that's a brand new thing for the most recent update of WMF5. So this stuff is constantly evolving every single day. And I'll tell you, we struggle just to stay up to date with creating examples and putting it out there on Building Clouds blogs. But we'll definitely include the links in the show notes so everybody can go out and see some of these example configurations and get the management pack.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. I learned so much from this episode, and that's why you guys are expert, and I'm so happy to have you guys talk about this and share your insight with us. Thank you so much. And I also want to thank our producer, Chris Caldwell, behind the scene, did all the heavy lifting for us so we can deliver this episode to you. And in upcoming episode, we're going to have Bruno and other subject matter experts to show us more about this automation. Until then, thank you for watching. This is Yang Chou signing off.